I dial Ben's number from memory. How many of you dial anyone's number from memory anymore? Let us know.
Paul Goody.
Ben Lawrence.
How's it going,
How
sir?
Are you, sir?
I'm good.
Oh, good, good, good. So, okay, so number one.
Yeah.
Nobody wrote in for a theme. So we don't have one.
That's all right. I think we can fill an hour on our own, don't you? We've done it before.
I think so, yeah. Although, should we make any mention whatsoever of the fact that there is a... Okay.
Actually, no, we can.
We don't have to say really anything about it. We just have to say that, did you know that there is a Goody Lawrence Lost podcast?
The Lost
episode.
What
could it be about?
Who knows?
I certainly don't.
Who knows what it could be about? Hey, so I went to get some food at the QFC before coming over here. And as I was walking out, they were filming a gal walking in. Now, did I tell you that they are filming The Real World Seattle right around the corner from where I am sitting now at Annex Theater?
No, you did not. Now, when you say that they're filming it there... Do you mean it is the time that they're filming it there, or do you mean that they're filming it right now and they will continue to film it there like it's their studio lot or something?
Yes, so you know where the...
Oh, it's their house.
Yeah, you know where the Northwest Film Forum is?
Of course I know where the Northwest Film Forum is.
They turned an old production studio... between the film forum and the police station up there on 12th into real world apartments. And they have, you know, a half dozen overly model types, millennials living there. And they've been filming around Capitol Hill.
Now, Ben, some history for the people that may not know this. There was a Real World Seattle. And were you in Seattle at the time that that one was happening?
I was. That was 1998. And I was
1998. They were done filming by the time that I got to Seattle. Go ahead.
I actually met those kids from 1998. I never watched the show, but I had an internship at a local sketch comedy TV show called Almost Live. And one of the producers of The Real World Seattle from 1998 knew the director. And as an intern, it was my job to take reservations for the show and to seat the audience when they were on taping days.
Gotcha.
And I was told by the director, Steve, that the real world kids are coming in and could I fit them in? And this was on the day of taping when I already have an entire audience full of regular people coming to see the show. So I was kind of upset. So I made them stand on the side of the aisle out of the way. They all stood for the entire, you know, it was a half an hour show, but we taped for about, you know, an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did when I say I met them, I gathered them from whatever holding cell in the TV station they kept them in and led them down the hallway to the studio. So that's my claim to fame from Real World Seattle 1998.
Now, they didn't know that you were the one responsible for having them stand for the entire hour, I'm guessing.
I think at that
or
point...
Or did they?
I think at that point they knew, because when the director told me to fit them in, I'm like, I can't fit them anywhere. They're going to have to stand over here. And he's like, okay
well, there you go.
That's fine. I'll tell them.
All right. Well, good. Good, good, good. So here's a question I have for you about that.
Yeah.
From what I understood, most people in Seattle did not like the fact that Real World Seattle was filming there. Is that correct?
It is correct.
In the old version.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, I don't know about the old version. I know that not too many people are happy about it now.
I believe in the old version also, some takes were ruined and things by people deliberately messing with the filming because they didn't want the real world there.
Yeah,
so and
that's a way to do it, to ruin
this. Is this seen as part of the changing of Capitol Hill? I know that people complain that Capitol Hill is becoming less and less of the artist's haven that it used to be.
Yeah, and it's become a place where the real world kids go bar hopping at night. I don't know. One of the guys who runs a lot of the nightlife joints around here, by the name of Dave Miner, has tweeted that he wants to take start a betting pool on how long or how soon it'll be until one of the real world kids gets arrested.
Oh, yeah. Now, Dave Miner, that sounds familiar. What does he...
He owns the Comet and Lost Lake and a number of other nightlife spots around the Pike Pine Corridor.
You may not know the answer to this, but who owns 9-Pound Hammer?
I don't know who owns 9-Pound Hammer. It might be the same people who own Smarty Pants down there in Georgetown.
Okay, because, yeah, I think it's a Georgetown thing. There's also, I mean, the folks that run the ice cream place, the video game place, Ice Cream Videos, Full Tilt. The guy who runs that also runs a bar, I know. But I think the bar is just right next to Full Tilt.
The one down so there in Columbia City?
Columbia City, yes. Yeah. My favorite spot when I was still in Seattle was that place. It was great.
Full Tilt? Yeah, it actually featured quite heavily in one of our films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was it Location?
It was Location, yeah.
Oh, I love Location. Oh, by the way, I found the duck mask.
Yes.
So we could do we could bring it back at some point, which is good.
I have a bunch of costumes from our time, and also when I cleaned out your house, I found a bunch that
oh, really?
Didn't get to send you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so I kept them. You still have them? Yeah. How much of my stuff do you have that you just never could send? Out of curiosity.
Actually. I think I told you before, I have a box of sketchbooks here.
Oh, yes.
They were hiding in a suitcase, and I didn't open the suitcase before sending the shipping containers, and so I would have sent them to
That's
you.
Right. Well, you know, I am notorious for leaving stuff, like, some of the stuff that I left at your place is now here, like the turntable and the...
Oh, right, yeah.
Mixers and stuff like that. But, yeah. Oh, speaking about turntable and mixers and stuff,
yeah.
I figured out something that we should do.
What's that?
We should do a really short theme song. Like, just okay. a stinger or a teaser or something.
Okay.
Or, this is the other option, and I don't think it's a bad option. If you have a recording of one of our songs, like a Schoolyard Bullies thing, or, well, you know... glitcher thing or right. Just any of those things that we could use as our intro.
Yeah.
That would be cool because I was thinking about it and I think that if we have a theme song, we can do a whole bunch of stuff that isn't coherent and still have an air of, hey, these guys take it up a notch from just the other thing. And this is something that I was thinking about. I am thinking that maybe we can differentiate ourselves from other things by not giving our opinions on stuff. I don't know how that would work exactly.
I'm not quite following you.
Like, you know, every two guy talking podcast, right?
Yeah.
It's those guys going, well, this is my take on whatever. My idea is that we don't offer any opinions whatsoever. I don't know how exactly it works.
Well, I'd like to tell you how I think it would work, but I can't anymore.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Too bad, Ben. No, and for what it's worth, I have my idea at one point in time was to tell you about how the family reunion I went to with the Lithuanians went.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I can tell you that it went really, really well. I was extremely happy. Everybody was very, like, open and accepting and
And
we had a fun time.
This was the first time you'd met everybody, or had you met your birth mother before?
I hadn't met any of them before.
Okay.
And so, but it was really great. There is a, and if you look at my Twitter account, you can see a picture of it, but there is a cake that I had there, which, and I don't want to mangle anything, but I'm going to give it a shot. It's, I think it's Chakotis. If you look it up, it's S with like a little V on the top of it. A-K-O-T-I-S.
Yes, I see it now.
And it is crazy looking, and it's awesome. It tastes, the way I could describe it is, a little bit like a one of those Christmas cookies before they're frosted. Sort of like pancake batter, but sweeter a little bit.
Okay.
And the way they make it, is there's a spit, like a rotating spit, like you would put a pig on, for example. And you drop batter on it. And you keep spinning it. And so these little stalactites or stalagmites form.
Stalagmites.
And they kind of grow outward. And you have this weird tree or coral looking circular mass. And then you cut that up and you eat it. And it's really, really good.
Wow.
I also had this thing called broccoli salad, which I'd never had before.
Broccoli salad?
Which, yeah, it's like broccoli and bacon and cashews. And it's pretty good. It's one of those sort of semi-sweet salads, like potato salad can be sometimes.
Yeah, I was with you up until
it's broccoli.
I was with you up until the cashews.
Oh, really? I love cashews.
I like cashews on their own. I don't like them in salads.
All right, well, you know, more broccoli salad for me then.
Don't judge me, sir.
In the world, we've divided it up. Broccoli salad for me, no broccoli salad for you. And I got to try out a little bit of the Lithuanian that I know, which is not much.
Yeah.
But it was still enough of an effort that people said, hey, thanks for making an effort.
Hey,
which was good.
That's great. What did you say?
I was just how's it going? Was one.
Yeah.
Also, where is Cathedral Square? Which of course, you know, it's in Lithuania. It's not here. And I pointed out, and this is a problem I have with many languages, I can ask how do I get somewhere, but if you start telling me, I'm not gonna know what you're saying. So it's kind of defeats the purpose. All I need to do, though, is learn the sentence, no, please show me.
Right.
And then that should work. But yeah, so many people. My sister, Angela, gave me a map, kind of. Like she didn't draw it out, but she sort of said, okay, these people are all, like, these are the children of these people, and these are the children of these people.
A genealogy chart, if you will.
Sort of a genealogy chart. But it was all text. It wasn't in a shape.
Gotcha.
So I had sort of assembled a shape in my mind, and it was great. Oh, one thing I learned that was very interesting. All right. Now, I'm going to ask you to use your memory.
Oh, God.
And see if you remember, because I'm thinking, like, Jennifer knows about these things that happen to me sometimes. I think maybe you're the other person who's been around me a lot. Do you remember a time when, and it might have been multiple times, but when I was eating something and all of a sudden, like, I wasn't choking, but I had kind of a pain in my chest and had to, like, kind of get up and, like, move around and try to swallow?
I do not remember this. I don't think that ever happened when all the times that we supped together.
Well, that is good, because it is horrible.
Well,
I feel like I'm dying when it happens.
What's happening? Does your throat just close up or something?
Well, it doesn't really close up. It's a weird kind of, I can't describe it because I don't know exactly what's happening. All I can say is it feels like I'm not swallowing correctly.
Gotcha.
Right?
Yeah.
And I can't throw up, and I can't, and it, but it's also not going down. It's just a very odd thing, and you gotta, I kind of have to stretch and think. Well, it turns out, my mom has the exact same issue.
So yeah,
and her brother also has the issue, and he said, "Have you been scoped?" And I said, "No." And he said, "You have to get yourself scoped."
Oh,
and I don't know what being scoped really means.
I think it means, I mean, they push a camera down your throat.
Yeah. See, that's what I was thinking they mean. I don't like that idea. And I was like, would I rather die?
Jesus.
And I'm still... See, the thing is, dying isn't going to cost me any money. But it would cost Jennifer and Betty money, so...
Yeah, I'm sure the money is what they're worried about.
No, that's what I'd be worried about. I'm a very miserly person, Ben. I don't like spending money if I don't have to. So yeah, but that was great. It was basically a night, an overnight thing. So I got there, and then I spent the night, and then I spent most of the day there, and then we came home. Little did I know that if I had planned a little bit better, I could have gone to see Hello from the Magic Tavern in Chicago, a mere 2 hours away. But then I wouldn't have gotten home until, you know, today probably.
So you left Friday to travel to where?
I left Friday around 8 o'clock. Got home around 11:30.
And you went a town 2 hours outside of Chicago?
Yeah, so it took me about 3 hours to get there. Me, Betty, and Jennifer all showed up.
The entire family.
It was great. Betty got to meet some cousins she didn't know she had.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
Did they get on?
Yeah, everybody seemed to get along really well.
Cool.
It was nice. The other thing, and I hesitate to bring it up, but I will bring it up, and we can talk about it as briefly as you want to.
Okay.
Are you sure? We live in a dystopian world, Ben.
Yes, we do.
We live in a world where now a person has been killed by a robot.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. No jetpacks for you. That is not the timeline we're on.
Robot bomb.
So I was thinking about it, and somebody said, well, why is it any different than a drone? And I was thinking, well, the police don't have drones, do they?
That we know of.
Maybe, yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. It's an interest. I would think, this is my thought, active shooter situation or not, to send a robot in to blow them up, you need a signed thing from a judge. Maybe they had one.
Did they not have
one? But you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, it sounds like one of those things where it was such a specific circumstance. They didn't require one because lives were in danger. Yeah.
Exactly. I agree. But it's one of those things that in the future, come on, judge, you got to sign this. We have to send the robot in.
Hang on. I got to finish this episode of Daredevil first. Have you seen the show? It's great.
City Hall is tying my hands.
So I haven't read much about the robot bomb that took out that sniper there in Dallas. I don't know if it was for lack of a better word, a land drone where there was like somebody in a van somewhere, basically guiding the robot,
or if
the robot was.
And that's the thing. You make a really good point. Yeah. I don't necessarily think it was an autonomous thing. My guess is, right, that it's probably the kind of robot that they use to defuse bombs.
Yeah. I think I saw a picture and it looked like a four-legged thing from one of those Boston Dynamics places.
Wait, really? Oh my gosh!
I don't think
if that is true.
I don't think it's a Boston Dynamics robot. I think it's something completely.
But
different.
It's one similar.
I'm gonna have to look up the picture. I don't remember. Maybe it's
because I've been waiting for that Boston Dynamics big dog to kill somebody for a while now. It's so It's so, okay, this is it. This is the end of our species. It's weird.
Okay, so it didn't have four legs. It was four wheels.
Okay.
And yeah, it just looks like a Martian rover.
Does it have like a little arm on it or anything?
Yeah, it's got an arm going out to the front and like a camera up on top.
Yeah, see, somebody was driving that. Yeah. I have to say.
I mean, but I think it's totally possible for one of those things to like get a heat signature of the sniper, and it knows the building layout because they you know, input the schematics into the robot's brain or whatever, and the robot devises a way itself to get to its target. Now,
can I tell you something?
It doesn't pull the trigger. Funny? The cops pull the trigger, but yeah, go ahead.
All right, you're gonna hear the sound of a weed whacker.
I am?
On this audio recording.
Okay.
That I'm doing right now. Because
are you whacking
weeds? There's a guy who mows my lawn now.
Yeah.
And I happened to schedule him to mow my lawn today.
Ah.
Not thinking necessarily that he would do it while I was recording. But it's my fault. I totally forgot.
Well, that's so, fine because.
But he seems to have moved on.
Okay. Well, it's load in here at Annex, and so there's noise happening. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some drilling or some sawing that you might hear in the background of this recording.
Now, people who go to Annex Theater should listen to this podcast. I know that they maybe don't. But Ben, what show is being loaded into Annex Theater right now?
Well, Paul, now that you ask, the show that is being loaded in is a show called Terra Incognita by Benjamin Benny, I think his last name is pronounced, directed by Pilar O'Connell, and it runs from the 22nd, I want to say. I'm making that up because I don't have a date, but it opens in a couple weeks.
You know what would be crazy, Ben?
What's crazy, Ben?
Do you and I know any of the actors in that play?
Let's see. Let me look it up. Gretchen Dama is the only actor I know.
Oh, Gretchen. Okay. And who does she play in it? Does it say? Do you know role?
I'm looking at the nxtheater.org website right now, and apparently her character's name is Sheila.
All right. So, all I'm saying is, at some point in time, because of the Goody Lawrence, you know, being, you know, our main venue was Annex Theater and all that.
Yeah, it was.
We could maybe talk to somebody from that show as part of the podcast.
Well,
throwing that out there.
Possible. There's another show happening on off nights.
Oh, what show is that?
It's called Girl. It is an ensemble-generated show.
Uh-huh.
And
I'm liking it. much more in our aesthetic.
I don't actually. This show is kind of it's unique in that it is not just happening on stage. It is happening everywhere in the theater. They're going to be leading the audience through the green room, through the lounge, through back in the elevator shaft.
Nice.
There are going to be actors underneath the booth. So we had a bunch of old computers underneath the booth, which are now here sitting in the office because they needed to clean out from underneath the booth.
So that they could lead people underneath the booth.
Yeah. Because people trump computer storage.
Do we know anybody in that show?
I do not know anybody in that
show. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
So.
It's an idea. I'm just throwing that out there. We don't have to do it, but it might be interesting.
There's a local theater-specific podcast that is going to be taping here on Thursday. And they originally wanted to use The Office, where I tape our podcast.
Uh-huh.
And I eventually...
Do we know the people who do that podcast?
No, I do not. And I eventually convinced the powers that be to have them record that other podcast in the lounge or the green room because, frankly, there's no room back here.
All right.
Not
so
even for me.
Are they going to be recording at 4 p.m.?
No, they're going to start at 5:30.
Because if so, we could fight them. We could have a...
Dueling podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. And then if you sync them up just right, you can hear the point where one podcast goes into the other.
It's
podcast.
Like Hamlet House. Do you remember Hamlet House?
Hamlet House was an idea that you and I had. I believe Rachel Jackson was also involved in the in the idea, and I still love it. I still think someone should do it. The idea was that you have Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. And Hamlet running at the same time in a space. And we thought a house would be good because then you can move around.
Yeah.
And the idea is that the audience could walk through the house and like predefined paths and could go, you know, wherever they wanted, basically.
Yeah.
And watch whichever show they wanted.
Yeah. And
it's still a good idea, in my opinion.
Still a good idea. And every once in a while, if you've read Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead, you know that they hook up with Hamlet every once in a while. So I think the tricky bit would getting everything to line up appropriately. But,
yes.
Yeah.
You'd have to... I mean, the big thing is, and this is how I had explained it, when we were pitching it, I think we might have pitched it to Annex, like, unofficially. We never went through an official thing. We just went up to whoever was the artistic director at the time, either...
Yeah,
I think it was Brett Fetzer.
Yeah, or maybe Jillian at the time.
Or Jillian Jorgensen, yeah. And said, hey, here's an idea. We were thinking about doing it. And they're like, yeah, I don't know if it's feasible. But the way it was going to work, in my opinion, the way that it would work is that... Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead had these long pauses.
Right.
And so you use the pauses to, you know, fill out to time it, you know, for Hamlet, basically. And I think it could get really, really funny, you know, for the people, because I would be a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead person.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I would stay and watch. And so while they're waiting for it to happen, that would be great. So one of the things that happens whenever I'm doing meetings at work is that they set ground rules. And I was hoping that we could maybe not run into the problem that we ran into with the Lost episode. And... the main problem with the Lost episode was me. And so I want to talk about something.
Do I have to police
there
you?
No. That's the thing, is that would put the onus on you, right? Ben, you got to make sure that I don't do bad things, which isn't good. Full disclosure for the audience. I am high functioning. I am... a good person. I'm not dangerous, but I do have some quirks, I guess we could say. Is quirks good?
I'm reasonable. You know, kind of waters it down, I think.
There's a time in the Lost episode where Ben actually said to me, hey, why don't you get off of this thing that you're obsessing about?
I was trying to wrap it up.
And I said, no, I can't. And I had to keep on going. So I'm not saying a safe word, but maybe the rule is that if you say, hey, maybe let's talk about something else, that I take that note.
Okay.
And I move on. That's like number one.
All right.
Number two, and I don't know how we do this. I don't... monopolize the conversation. I don't know how that's possible other than me trying to be conscious of it. But that was the other issue, was that it was basically me talking at you for an hour. which is not what you signed on for.
Well, and, you know, in your defense, it wasn't the full hour. We didn't really get deep into that conversation until, you know,
okay, good.
25, 30 minutes in. So I was thinking about just releasing the episode anyway, but then cutting it off when we started talking about that.
Yeah.
Just like slicing
well,
it.
Well, but there was also a huge part of it where, I mean, not to give away, you know, the stuff, because eventually sometime we may have to put it out as an emergency release.
Yeah.
When we don't have time to do another one. But there's a lot of it, because we don't edit,
right,
as people who listen to this are painfully aware.
Yeah.
And so, like, it felt like 20 minutes. I'm not sure how long it is, but a long period of time was me trying to look up something.
Oh, yeah. That was a moment where I told you to forget about what you're doing. And you're like, I can't. Don't you understand? Don't you know me?
Yeah. So, people were treated to me talking about a thing that I was looking up, which isn't good.
I forget what you were trying to look up anyway.
Oh, I remember exactly what I was trying to look up.
Oh, the dude who was on the show who got the thing. Okay.
And in fact, the great thing about this, since we're re-recording it, is that I can say in just like one sentence what it was I was looking up, and there is no problem. And everyone should be fine with it. There's a guy named LeVar Jones who got shot while going for his identification after being instructed to go to his identification.
Not lethally shot.
Yeah. This man lived, and he was able to talk to people about this situation, and therefore I was saying that one could look at that and sort of think about it, sort of use it as a way to go forward. Kind of.
So hey, have you been playing Pokemon Go?
You know, here's the thing. I've caught Squirtle. But here's the problem. Betty also wants to play it.
Yeah.
She doesn't have a data plan. That's number one, and that's why I'm not really into playing it. I don't want to eat up my data plan.
It does eat up.
For Pokemon.
The big winners of this game are the data providers.
Cell phone companies.
Yeah.
Yep.
Everybody's going over their plan.
But there's a way that you can, like, do it, you know, just go places that have free Wi-Fi. Like, Target probably has some, right? You could go to Target.
Yeah.
Get on their free Wi-Fi. Internet cafes. I bet you there are people who are going around trying to get on people's Wi-Fi networks. You know, other people's,
yeah,
like surfing other people's open Wi-Fi networks trying to find Pokemon.
Yeah.
But I will tell you this, small town, Edwardsville, Illinois, I was in my car at the gas station waiting for my wife to come back from the gas station, and I saw a group of teens who were most likely up to no good, I thought, walking in a group.
Starting to make trouble in their neighborhood?
And, you know, at midnight, walking around, you know, what are they doing? What's going on? And, of course, they were looking for Pokemon.
Right.
And I was like, that's good.
It seems like everybody in Seattle is playing this game. I have not downloaded the app. And at this point I'm like, you know, I'm not going to, just because I feel like I am one of the few people now who is not playing that game. But I was, I miss the Pokemon experience. I'm too old for it. The whole Pokemon phenomenon passed me by.
Yes. Well, the thing that you may or may not already know is that this is an overlay from another game. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I believe it's called, I want to say it's called Ingress.
This is another augmented reality app that you can download.
Yeah, Ingress was a game that was created back in like 2013. And there's a guy at work who plays it,
yeah,
right? And it's basically like a sort of an alien takeover game. And I'm being very, I'm sure anyone who plays it is like, that's not the mythology. And I apologize. But it's basically that there are certain sites that you protect and scout out. And you have a red team and a blue team, I think, or a red team and a green team, one of the two.
Yeah.
And you take over sites. And this guy was telling me about it, and it's kind of great. And, you know, he's, like, high up in this game. And what it appears that Pokemon Go did is they took this game, which is popular in its own right, but it's only popular with the people who like playing games.
Right.
You know, it's a good game. And they overlaid Pokemon on the top of it. It's the same company. So now they've already got, you know, proof of concept. They've already got this other game.
Yeah.
That is fun. And now they added Pokemon to the top of it.
That reminds
me. I was telling Jennifer.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. That reminds me of when Nintendo wanted to release Super Mario Bros. 2. The original Super Mario Bros. 2 turned out to be so hard, they scrapped it. And they actually took a previous game that they had and just replaced all the sprites. That's why.
Oh wow!
That's why the NES Super Mario Brothers 2 is extremely different in feel from the other Mario games.
Right, right. Because it's not.
It's actually a different. It's a completely different game.
And people just had a hard time playing it. It was too complicated for them.
Yeah, the first one when they tried to. Like, test it.
Obviously, that game now would be... I mean, people would love to take a crack at it, right?
I think they've released it. I think they finally released it as, like, the Lost Levels. But, it's Super Mario Bros. 2 is based on a game called Doki Doki Panic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea. Oh, my gosh, I'm yawning. That's not because I think that's boring, then. I'm lying down while I'm talking. And I didn't get to sleep until late last night, so.
Late meaning like 10 o'clock for you?
Oh, no, midnight.
Midnight?
I was up until midnight.
What were you doing till midnight?
Driving home from from the family reunion. And then getting gas and watching kids play Pokemon. but what I was going to say is that there is a house in New Orleans. They call the Rising Sun. I wanted to stop myself from doing that, and I didn't. I was starting. Ben, people who are listening to this will get it, or they won't. Either way, they're not going to be happy with me. So let's just continue going.
You don't want to sing more of the House of the Rising Sun?
No, I don't. I feel bad about it. So I was going to say Jennifer told me, but I forget what Jennifer told me now. I forgot what it was that we were talking about. You were talking about Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, was she talking to you when I was talking about that?
No. What were we talking about right before Super Mario Brothers?
Pokemon Go is an overlay of an existing game.
Yeah. I don't remember. It's too bad. I'll listen to this someday, and then I'll know. Ben, do you know that I don't listen to the episodes a lot?
You don't?
You could do whatever you want to with them, and... Yeah, it's one of those things of where I've got so many other podcasts that I'm not a part of that I need to listen to.
Right, right.
That actually listening to this one seems indulgent.
It takes an hour away of your day where you can listen to something else.
Yes, it's true. I think Jennifer's coming in to take a nap. Yes, she's nodding her head. So,
are you in your bedroom or on the couch? Or
Yeah. Oh, no. Okay, so... So, Jennifer and I have two totally different sleep situations. Jennifer has a large pad that she sleeps on.
Okay.
The love sack. Whereas I sleep in what is essentially a lounge chair that one would have on a patio.
Yeah, I think you've sent me a picture of that.
Yeah. So yeah, this is our room, but I am in the lounge chair and she is sleeping on the left side. Oh, traditional beds are dumb.
They're in the same.
Is what I say.
The love sack and the lounge chair are in the same room.
Yep, exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Also, I think traditional beds are awesome. So.
Oh yeah.
We can agree to disagree, but I'm right.
Well, you can have them, Ben. Is what I say.
And you can have the cashew salads.
Yeah. Exactly. Hey, wait a second. Ben has all the beds. I have the cashew salad. You know, that cashew salad's going to go bad. I'm going to have to share it with the world, I think. That's what I'll do. All the cashew salad, which I previously was the sole proprietor of, I'm just going to let other people have it.
Bring them over to your house. So for all of you in the world who want to eat this cashew salad, just go over to Paul's house, which is your address is?
Hey, Ben. Did I ever tell you, when I was a kid... I came up with the concept of stealing everything.
That's a heck of a concept.
So I was a shoplifter.
Oh, I see.
A little bit. And I got arrested for shoplifting.
Did you now?
And I didn't want to steal anymore. But I also loved stealing.
How old were you?
So I came up
when this happened.
15, I want to say.
Okay.
And so I came up with the concept of, okay, well, I've just stolen everything. But where am I going to put it?
Right.
Right?
You got to steal a house.
It's Stephen Wright logic, as I would call it. You know, he said, it's his thing. He said, I have a seashell collection scattered all over the world. Perhaps you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
I was like, okay, by the same measure, I have now stolen everything.
It's all mine.
But I'll just leave it where it is.
Right.
And that's how I cured myself of kleptomania. I felt bad about it. What I used to do, I'll give you an example. I would take books from the bookstore.
Okay.
B. Dalton's, which isn't around anymore. Hopefully they don't sue me.
B. Dalton Bookstore, we had one of those in Lacey.
Yeah, I would take books from it.
Yeah,
I would take them home. I would read them, and then I would reverse shoplift them back onto the shelves.
Yeah,
and in my mind, I was like, "Therefore, I haven't stolen anything."
You're just treating a bookstore like a library.
Exactly. It's I'm just stealing the information.
Yeah.
Oh, how little I knew that would be the exact same thing that people would use as their justification for selling PDFs of A Surprise for Giraffe and Elephant and When Elephant Met Giraffe.
Oh.
It's not the books. It's the information from the books that they're selling.
Does that happen? Do people sell PDFs of
those
books?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Well, or give them away. I mean, you
right.
know. Either way. But yeah, they totally do.
How'd you find out about that?
I used to Google my books all the time.
Ah.
Because I was interested in it.
Seeing if there's any new reviews or anything out there.
Yep.
No.
Exactly. And then I stopped doing it because it's depressing. I don't like critics, Ben. This is something I've come up with.
And apparently they don't like you either.
Well, some of them do, but a lot of them? Nope.
Yeah.
I always, in my opinion... people who criticize stuff should be people in the field, and that way you can feud with them, as opposed to
like
somebody.
You should only accept criticism from peers.
Like Shel Silverstein could have written a thing going, I think giraffe and elephants suck, and I'd be like, oh yeah, well, I find you extremely great, and I feel bad about it.
Please like me.
Freaking at the Freaker's Ball, though, I wouldn't be able to criticize until I put out my own adult party album.
What?
Because I don't know if you know about it, but Freaking at the Freaker's Ball is a Shel Silverstein album where he sings dirty songs about things.
I have never heard of this.
Oh, man, it's one of my favorite albums.
Freakers at the Freakers Ball?
Freakin' at the Freakers Ball.
Freakin' at the Freakers Ball.
Yep.
I'm gonna look it up.
Yep. Yep. He goes through all the people that are at the Freakers Ball.
Yeah.
And he has the line that I love, which is masturbators baiting their masters. It rhymes with the line before it, so it's much more clever when he does it. But yeah, he's a clever guy, and sometimes, you know, if he's dirty, he will come up with clever things that one would not associate necessarily with a children's author unless they knew a little bit more about him.
From
like the fact that he has an album.
From Wikipedia,
Freakin' at the Freakers Ball.
Freakin' at the Freakers Ball is a studio album produced by Ron Halfkind, written by Shel Silverstein, originally released in 1972. The title track was covered by Dr. Hook and The Medicine Show on an album titled Sloppy Seconds.
Nice.
So the track listing for Freakin' at the Freakers Ball.
Yes.
Thumbsucker. I got stoned. Oh, yes. I got stoned and I missed it.
Yep.
Sarah Cynthia Sylvia Stout would not take the garbage out. Stacey yep. Brown got
that one.
Yeah.
That one is a little bit like, I don't know if it's in one of his books or not, but that one is a little bit less,
less dirty,
you know, racy.
Yeah. Yeah. Number four, Stacey Brown got two.
Yeah.
Number five, Polly in a Porny.
Yep.
Number six, Freaking at the Freakers Ball, the title track.
Yep.
Number seven, All About You. Number eight, Don't Give a Dose to the One You Love Most.
Yes.
Number nine.
And
yeah?
The dose in that case is a venereal disease.
Number nine.
It sounds like
a dose of, you know, something like LSD or...
Yeah, yeah,
or
yeah, exactly. Like ecstasy. I thought, don't slip him a Mickey or what have you, yeah. But nope.
Number nine, The Peace Proposal. Number 10, Masochistic Baby, written by Silverstein and Mike Settle, apparently, co-credited.
Huh.
Number 11, Liberated Lady, 1999. Number 12, there's only 15. Number 12, The Man Who Got No Sign.
Got No Sign. That one, I love that one. It's it's creepy and cool.
Number 13, A Front Row Seat to Hear Old Johnny Sing. Oh, these are... Okay, so there are 12 original songs, and these last three are 1999 CD release bonus tracks. So,
interesting.
Number 13 is A Front Row Seat to Hear Old Johnny Sing. Number 14, 26 Second Song. And number 15, Everybody's Making It Big But Me.
26 Second Song is great.
Is it true to its word? Is it only 26 seconds?
And it's very clever. Yeah.
Yeah?
I enjoy it. You know that he wrote... songs for other artists as well, yes?
Did not know that. Not really.
A Boy Named Sue by Johnny Cash was written by Shel Silverstein.
Really?
Yeah. It's good, too. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
One
can look up Shel Silverstein's Wikipedia page, and there's a whole list of things he's done.
Yeah, and He also did a book called Uncle Shelby's ABZ Book, which Jennifer just gave it a thumbs up. it is, so obviously she can hear me a little bit.
1960, Simon & Schuster, first book of original material for adults.
Yep, and it's written as a children's book, but it's not for kids.
Is it naughty?
It's kind of naughty, but it's more like you imagine a child reading it, and it's pretty. It's basically trying to get kids to hurt themselves or get kidnapped or yeah. It's great. It's my daughter thinks it's hilarious, but. She has only looked at it through my supervision.
I'm glad you clarified that because I was going to ask if you'd let your daughter read it, a Shel Silverstein adult book.
Yeah, but like as an example, this is because it's not
your supervision meaning like I said, you read it to her.
It's not dirty. It's just like as an example.
Is it suggestive?
hey, kids, bring this coupon to your local grocery store, and they will give you one free pony.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then, oh, on this page, Uncle Shelby is giving you a shiny new quarter.
Yeah.
And underneath, if the quarter isn't here, your mom probably took it. You know, that kind of thing. So,
there was
it's a lot of psychological. Oh!
There's a stand-up comedian back in the 70s named Soupy Sales who kind of did the same thing on a TV show. He says, hey, kids, go into your parents' purse and grab all those green pieces of paper and send them to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he got canned for that, didn't he?
He got in serious trouble. Say. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I thought of a cool prank.
What's that?
One of my relatives ran a marathon.
Cool prank,
and he was
bro.
Talking about... He said, you know, it's 26.2 miles. Don't take that point. You know, and somebody said, well, it's 26 miles, right? He said 26.2. Don't take that point two off because it's, you know,
because that's how long it was from Athens to something else.
Something like that. Yeah.
The length that, or, that marathon ran.
Yeah.
But yeah, those last 2.2, I'm sure, are the hardest.
So my thought of a horrible, horrible prank is to make a fake finish line.
Oh, geez.
For the marathon, like a quarter of a mile away from the actual end. How horrible that would be for people psychologically. It would be just so many people would be so upset, but they'd be really tired. And you could probably outrun them while they were chasing you.
Oh, I almost,
because there's some.
I almost had it right. It, what, Marathon was not the name of the messenger, of the Greek messenger, of which Marathon is named
after.
Is
it the place?
It's the place. And 26.2 miles is about 40 kilometers, which is the distance from Marathon to Athens.
Uh-huh. Yes. Well, you know, I think it'd be cool to know that you could run that.
Yeah, and people post times on the back of their car, which I think is kind of funny.
Post times on the back of their car?
If you've ever seen these car stickers where it's a white oval with a black outline and black number, like a time inside of it, those are their marathon times.
Oh, I had no idea.
Like,
that's
why are
pretty
you
cool.
Why are you putting that on your car? Shouldn't you be putting that on, like, your marathon jersey?
Well, you know, it's like, you know, it's basically saying, hey,
I run, but now I'm driving because I'm lazy.
Or, you know, hey, if I weren't going to wherever the place is I'm going.
Yeah, I'd be running.
I would be able to run it this much. But yeah, I wonder what those things are. So we've learned something today.
We did learn something today.
And that's great. Yeah. I'm trying this new thing where I'm using as little electricity as possible. And by that, I mean, when I don't know what I want to do, like, do I want to play a video game or do I want to finish reading this book?
Yeah.
I'll finish reading the book if it's daylight out.
Right.
Because, you know, I'm not spending any energy.
Because use all your energy at once. Lights, video games.
Yes, exactly.
Heat or air conditioning.
And also, yeah, I am in air conditioning.
Does your
air conditioning is great, by the way.
Yeah, really, does really it good. Get, like, super hot over there? Like, into the...
Oh, yeah, it,
like,
can get up into...
And...
Yeah, the hundreds.
Wow.
It can. It gets super hot and super cold. The good news, for me anyway, is that St. Louis does not get as cold as Chicago does.
Right, it gets super cold.
I'm not
cold.
Sure
well, I think,
why.
I think Chicago has the lake to blame for that.
Yeah, blame the lake.
Blame the lake.
That's a good t-shirt. Blame the lake. That's a good name for this podcast, too. Blame the lake.
All right,
this
all right.
Episode.
Blame the lake.
It's the lake's fault, by the way. The wind in Chicago in the winter, no matter what kind of coat you're wearing, will knife through it.
Yeah.
It's pretty hardcore.
Can't say that I've ever been in Chicago in the wintertime, but I'll take your word on it.
I was. Didn't like it.
Yeah.
But a cool thing happened. I was talking about the Magic Tavern podcast.
Yeah.
And how I could have gone to it had I Had I thought of it,
had you known,
and planned better. But it takes place in the magical land of Foon. The magical land of Foon is, of course, a fictional place, and a guy named Adam M. Roth, who is Adam_Roth_CG on Twitter.
Okay.
Created a map of Foon and gave it to the guys on the podcast. And they were looking for him. They were like, hey, does anybody know who Adam Roth is?
Oh, I see.
And so I did a little bit of a search, and I found Adam Roth's, who were graphic designers, because I was like, that's probably, you know, this is a really good...
pretty safe bet.
Yep. And then I looked for ones that were close to Chicago, or in that general area. And then I sent them to one of the cast members of Hello from the Hatchet Hammer and said, did you see the guy? Is it maybe this guy? And the second guy that I came up with was the guy who it was.
The second guy. All right.
Yeah. So, once again, Twitter, I feel like I'm on there for a reason. I'm doing some good.
Brings people together.
For people.
You can help
love
bring people together.
Introducing celebrities to each other on Twitter. It's happened a couple times. Under other accounts, but
where you introduce celebrities to one another,
yeah, or scientists to celebrities, things like that.
Like here, you know, Yoko Ono, I want to introduce you to Ewan McGregor.
Well, no, like somebody says, you know, I'm really interested in quantum physics, right? And then there's somebody who does work in that area. And you say, hey, so-and-so, do you like this TV show? Because he wants to know about something you know a lot about.
Oh,
and then the
two
of them talk. That kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I used an example that wasn't something I actually did so that I wouldn't get...
So you wouldn't out a now-defunct Twitter account?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and good plus, save. I delete my Twitter accounts when I get rid of them.
You do?
I don't like hanging... Because when I want to quit Twitter, I'm done with it.
Yeah.
You know? And if I were to just suspend my account or hide it, then I would come back. I come back anyway. But
as we've learned.
But lots of times the reason that, like, the reason I stopped when I had, you know, it was a very modest, you know, like a couple of thousand followers. It was still too much work. It's crazy amount of work. You know, it becomes like a second job.
Well,
basically.
I mean, if you want to maintain it properly,
right? Exactly.
If your goal on Twitter is to collect followers, then yeah.
Oh, but not even to collect followers. Just if your goal is to be an open, accessible person who responds to things that people say to them.
Yeah, I've decided I don't really care about that anymore.
Yeah, I understand.
I get comments on YouTube videos. I get replies on Twitter. I'm like, I don't. I got something else to do.
Well, Ben, you're fastly, rapidly. There you go, becoming part of the establishment.
Oh,
that's
am
fine.
I?
Oh yes. Oh yes, Ben. That's the thing. You've been the man for quite some time. You just don't know it yet.
Oh yes, yes.
I'm here to tell you. You are a gatekeeper into the world of... I wonder if there is anyone, Ben, who says, if not for Ben Lawrence, I would have succeeded in this entertainment game.
I highly doubt there is.
I asked him to show my video, and then I didn't give him the DVD, and so he didn't show it. That jerk. I don't know if that... I'm trying to think of a situation... I don't know if that ever happened, but I'm trying to think of a situation where you had some stepping stone in someone's career.
I do program the Sketchfest Seattle Comedy Film Challenge, and I have had to turn down a bunch of filmmakers, but I doubt... But, you know, the showing the film at the Comedy Film Challenge is not a game maker, a rainmaker.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a game changer. Rain changer.
Sometimes... It can be, sometimes it can, you know, if it's good, you know, more people will see it.
Yeah.
But it does have to be good, and if it is good and YouTube exists, other people will have seen it already.
Probably
all you're really doing is making new people.
Yeah, more see it. More people will watch a video on YouTube in a single day, and then we'll see, you know, the entire comedy film challenge.
Yep, I believe it. But still, you've got people who. Here's the thing, you've got people who wouldn't watch YouTube that might watch these things.
Yeah.
I think that's where you get your extra audience.
If I made a change in at least one person's life, it means everybody else wasn't paying attention.
I like it. All right, Ben. It's time.
Oh, God.
Here we go. All right, I'm coming in. I'm getting up out of the chair. I'm walking.
You're walking.
Outside of the room. I am getting close to... where my child is sitting.
So it's no longer called yelling for Betty. Phone. It's called walking to Betty.
Yeah, because she wouldn't hear me right now. She's got her headphones on. Hey, Betty.
I can hear you.
Oh, hello. So we're recording the podcast today.
Okay.
What is
what was our theme again? Blame it on the lake.
Yeah.
Blame the lake. Hey, Betty, is there anything that you blame a lake for?
Seaweed. Well, I mean, we are plants. And also, I'm cosplaying as Dave Strider for Halloween.
Okay. You go. Betty blames lakes for seaweed and weird plants.
Okay.
Which I think, you know, that is a blame that they actually are responsible for. So good for her.
Very legit blames.
Put the blame where it lay. And then the other thing is she was saying she's going to be cosplaying as Dave Strider for Halloween. Dave Strider, character from Homestuck.
Ah.
Homestuck is the new thing that Betty is obsessed with.
Yes, it's a video game of sorts.
It's sort of... The way it looks to me, anyway, is like it's a text adventure game, but you only have one choice. If that makes sense.
And I think we talked about this previously, and it turns out that Dave Strider is actually a female character.
Wait a second. What? I don't think that's true. I'm going to check, but I'm pretty positive that it's not.
There was a conversation we had where I assumed, based on the name, that a character that she was talking about was a male character, but it turns out to be a female character.
All right, let's find
out. Maybe it's not Dave Strider. Maybe it's somebody else.
Now, Betty, I know that you don't like to necessarily assign gender to people, but is Dave Strider a boy or a girl?
He is most definitely a boy.
All right.
He is most definitely.
Well, then I will go back and find the name of that character and bring it up, because I'm not making this up.
Good cross-dressing cosplaying at the same time.
Oh, no. I wholeheartedly support you dressing as a male character. It was just that Ben thought... Oh, actually, maybe you can help us out here.
What?
Do you remember telling Ben about a character that he thought was a boy based on the name, but it was actually a girl character? Do you know who that might have been?
No, I don't remember.
Was it maybe Radical Edward?
Oh, yeah. Ah. Yeah, she's a girl.
Yes, Radical Edward from
Cowboy Bebop.
There we go.
Yeah. It took me a second, but as I was articulating, I'm like, oh, wait, I know who it is. Yeah. Yes,
Radical Edward. So, how dare I think that's a boy's name?
Actually, the other thing that I will say is seatbelts
are important.
The name of the band that does the theme song for Cowboy Bebop, it's one of my favorite... It's either the name of the band or it's the name of the song. I wish I could remember which it is. But the theme song to Cowboy Bebop is great. And I apologize to all the fans of Cowboy Bebop for not
remembering
whether Seatbelts
or performed
is the name of the band.
Yeah, Seatbelts.
What's that?
It is either called or performed by Seatbelts.
Exactly. And will we ever find out? Who knows?
Nah, we will.
All right, Ben.
All right, Paul.
I think this is another success. Another successful podcast. A good podcast is a podcast that you don't end going, hey, should we have done this? That is the sign of a bad podcast.
Yeah.
This, though.
One where we go, oh, my God, I just listened. I just realized what we were saying, and let's not do this again.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So, Ben, thank you so much.
Yep.
I will talk to you more later.
Yep. Talk to you later.
And have a good evening.
You too.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
How do I turn this off?
Yeah, this is weird. Every time.